Welcome to Follow Your Kind Podcast, a show where we explore the meaning of kindness and how we can express it in our daily lives. My name is Christina, and I'm your host. All right. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Follow Your Kind Podcast. And today we have Jen Polly. And Jen is one of the admins on the Vegan Atlanta group and a person that I wanted to talk about to for a while, just about different trends of what is happening in the vegan world in Atlanta and kind of getting her insight from monitoring and getting the exposure to all of the conversations that are happening on the Facebook page. But I'm also curious, as always, about what drives people to make the decisions that they make and to make the transition towards the vegan lifestyle. And that's another topic that I'm really excited to talk to Jen about today. So, hi, Jen. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
So, let's dive right in. Can you tell us a little bit of your personal story and how did your journey on vegan lifestyle started?
Sure. Well, it started when I was 18 years old, back in 1993. I went to college away from home. And at that point, I really didn't know that you could even be a vegetarian or vegan. Like, I didn't know that such a thing really even existed. You know, this was before the internet, and as far as I knew, people just had to eat meat. I never really liked meat. I grew up sort of rescuing animals all the time. I was always bringing home dogs and cats and other animals, and my mom and I volunteered at a no-kill animal shelter, and I really didn't like the idea of eating animals, and I kind of would try to, you know, I could only eat a hamburger if it was covered in a lot of other things, but I always just thought, like, this is just the way it is, like, you know, you have to eat meat. So I went to college, and I saw at the cafeteria that there were vegetarian things on the menu, and then for the first time, it clicked in my head that you don't have to eat meat, and I thought, well, if I don't have to eat meat, why am I going to? So I became a vegetarian, and a few months after that, I met a couple of guys on campus who had started an animal rights group, and they had a table at one of these, you know, fairs where there's different groups that you could see on campus, and I went up to talk to them, and they told me, it was the first time I heard the word vegan, never heard that word before, and they explained about, you know, how dairy and eggs is still harming animals. And I went home and I thought about it, and I just realized, you know, I have to be vegan. I can't continue to eat dairy and eggs knowing now what I know. So I became vegan, and I got involved in that group, and that's how it started.
That is really cool. So it sounds like you had that kindness and awareness to a degree from early on, and then just figuring out that it is actually okay from the perspective of the personal health to sustain fine without animal products that kind of unlocked your way to accepting the lifestyle. Is that relatively accurate?
Yes, that is exactly
so
accurate.
What do you think was the most impactful thing for you that you learned? Is there a specific fact that stood out, or is it just in general that it all clicked and made sense for you?
I'd say, well, going vegetarian was just the fact of knowing I didn't have to eat animals, and I kind of felt like I had been sort of maybe lied to my whole life. Like, how come no one ever told me I didn't have to eat this? Like, why are all these people eating animals when we didn't have to? Mm-hmm. And then, as you know, I'm from the city, so I never lived in the country. I didn't know anything about dairy or eggs. So then when I learned about veganism, then I also sort of felt lied to on that, because I didn't really know. I mean, I knew chickens laid eggs, but I guess I just didn't really have a concept of, industrialized agriculture, CAFOs, that kind of thing. So knowing all that was pretty impactful, that dairy and eggs, you know, contribute just as much to animal suffering as meat. That made an impact on me.
Mm-hmm. And for the listeners who maybe not as aware about the dairy industry, because I know there's a lot of people who are vegetarian, as I was myself for the first many years on my journey towards vegan lifestyle, and I thought that as long as I'm not eating meat, I'm okay, I'm not harming anybody, but milk, you know, cows don't have to die to give milk. Can you give your perspective to the listeners who are still in that place? Why is dairy still harmful to the animals, or why? What's the ethical argument against consuming dairy products as well as meat?
Sure, because I was in that same position as you for a few months. When I stopped eating meat, I really, you know, I had no concept that dairy or eggs was bad. I thought, oh, you know, they don't hurt the animals, so there's nothing wrong with that. But then I learned that, so for example, in the dairy industry, you know, it requires cows to be continuously pregnant. So they're forcibly impregnated once they have their babies. If it's a male cow, he becomes veal. Female cows will become like their mothers, dairy cows, but they're taken away from their mothers very young, and so that humans can take the milk that was intended for the babies. And then after, you know, numerous cycles of being impregnated and having their babies taken from them, dairy cows then become basically hamburger meat. You know, they don't have the same kind of meat as a cow that's raised to become meat. So they become ground beef or maybe dog food. So it's pretty cruel. And I also didn't know. I mean, I was born in the 70s, and when I was growing up, most children, at least, you know, my friends and stuff, when I was young, babies were fed with formula. Breastfeeding was not really popular at that time. People thought formula was, you know, the way to go, and so I didn't really know anything about it. So then I learned about dairy, how, you know, human milk is really what is intended for humans, and cow's milk is intended to be for baby cows, and it's really kind of distressing that we're taking milk intended for a baby of another species and giving it to humans when the best milk for humans is human milk. And also that we drink milk as adults, because, you know, milk is supposed to be for infants, not for adults, and certainly not the milk of another species.
I just find it so interesting that once we make that leap, right, once we cross that line, and like, for example, for you, or I know it definitely was for me, once after I became vegan and looking back on like the choices that I made before, and it's just so crystal clear to me, like all the motivations why not to consume animal products, why drinking milk doesn't make sense. It's also crystal clear to me. But why do you think the bigger part of the population is still in the shadow about it? What do you think it is that just doesn't click in their head, or why do you think they don't see things the way that we see them? What prevents them?
Well, I think it's several different things. One thing is just tradition. So if you're raised like I was, you know, drinking milk is, you know, your parents think drinking milk is healthy. So they think they're giving their kids the best by giving them milk. Mm-hmm. And I remember I had a conversation recently with a coworker who was talking about how her 2-year-old son, every time he would drink milk, was getting diarrhea and an upset stomach. And other coworkers were all talking about, oh, we'll try 2% or skim milk. And I felt like I had to say something. And I was like, well, if it's making him upset, you know, don't give him milk. And just by me saying that, yeah. It was like people didn't understand. They felt like, but children have to have milk, because that's what we're taught to believe. Mm-hmm. Part of that is the dairy industry, funding in schools. You know, preschools are all required to have milk. And I know some vegan parents who've had issues with the fact that if you attend a public preschool in Georgia, your child, it's law that they have to be served milk, even if the child doesn't drink milk. So, you know, it's just cultural indoctrination, you know, supported by the dairy industry, which is very powerful.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. So you mentioned then you said about 18 when you transitioned to a vegan diet. What did the transition look like for you? Were there any difficulties or any areas where you struggled? And what was the reaction of your parents? I don't know if you lived with them or what was your family's reaction at that time?
Well, I was living away from home. So at first it didn't have an impact. I was at college in a different state than where my parents lived. I went to college in St. Paul, Minnesota, and the Twin Cities is a very progressive place. So even in the early and mid 90s, it was very vegan friendly. And I learned that there was not a large vegan community, but enough of a vegan community that it was not difficult to meet other vegans, or there were vegan restaurants, there were vegan things in the, like there was a health food section in the supermarket. So that wasn't difficult. I think for me, the hardest part was when I decided this is what I want to do, I thought immediately, like, how am I going to live without cheese? Because I thought I love cheese so much, and I knew I couldn't eat it anymore, and I thought it was going to be this huge struggle. But I was determined to do it, so I put this plan in place in my head, which is that it was like a three-part step, or three steps in this. So every time, you know, and in college, people are eating pizza all the time. So people would always be ordering pizza and, hey, do you want some? And if I saw, you know, someone had pizza or something with cheese and I felt like, oh, I want to have that, I would remind myself of the cruelty involved in it. I would remind myself, I would tell myself that it was disgusting, that cheese is the coagulated breast milk of another species and it's filled with pus and it's disgusting. And then I would also remind myself that it wasn't good for my health. And I think it only maybe took, I'm going to say, a couple weeks, maybe a couple months before I actually, the smell of cheese became disgusting to me, because I kept telling myself in my head that it's disgusting, that soon it became that way, and it was at a point where I didn't even want it anymore. Plus, a lot of cheeses are not even vegetarian. They're made with rennet, which comes from the lining of a cow's stomach. So you don't really know. I mean, you might go to a health food store and sometimes they will label it as the cheese comes from, has microbial rennet, which means that it's from microbes and not an animal. But generally speaking, if you order a pizza from Pizza Hut or whatever, you're not going to know. So that was another way that
I did not know that.
Yeah.
That is really interesting. Wow. And this, I don't think I've ever heard anybody talk about having a strategy for transition, like an actual mental strategy for retraining the way you think. How did you come up with that?
I just knew I didn't want to have cheese, and that was going to be my struggle. Like, nothing else was really hard for me. I didn't really miss meat because I never really liked it. I didn't really drink milk as an adult anyway, maybe in cereal. Cheese was the one thing that, like, because I went vegetarian before I went vegan, and, you know, I was eating a lot of stuff with cheese, and so I just kind of was like, I don't know how I'm going to live without cheese. I felt like cheese was everywhere. So I felt like I really needed to do something more to make sure that I stuck with, you know, what I wanted to do. So
I think this is really remarkable. So it sounds like you were actually able to step away from yourself and almost look at yourself from the side and figure out what it is that you need, and like what were the triggers for you and what it is that you need to basically recondition yourself to think differently. This requires like a level of mindfulness that a lot of people don't possess. Did you have at that point, or do you have now, like a continuous spiritual practice that allowed you to do that?
No, I don't really consider myself like a particularly spiritual person. I guess one thing that motivated me was, so I had met these people who were vegan, mm-hmm. who were starting this animal rights group at my college. And some of them had been vegan for a couple of years. I mean, most of them were, you know, in our late teens, early 20s. So none of them had been vegan for a long time, but they had been doing it for a few years in some cases. And when I thought it was going to be a struggle, I just kind of looked at them and I thought, well, if these people can do it, why am I making myself out like I'm some special person that I can't do it? Like, if they can do it, there's nothing different about me that means that I can't do it. And so that was also kind of how I, you know, decided to come up with that strategy, because I thought, like, every time I thought maybe I wasn't going to succeed, I just also reminded myself, you know, other people who are no different than me can do it. I'm not, you know, incapable of it. So
mm-hmm. That's really cool. And for the listeners, Jen is wearing a shirt and it says vegan, choosing life over habit, tradition, culture, and convenience. And it definitely says, I think, that the way that you approach your transition, you definitely highlight all of those that you were choosing your values of kindness and the decision not to harm other beings over the culture maybe that you were brought into, and as well as the convenience and habit that you had before. So maybe that this is a good turning point for us to transition into some of the activism that you're doing. So it sounds like from the point that you transitioned towards the vegan diet, that has been a through line through your life. Starting then, is that accurate? And can you
yes.
talk more about it?
Yeah, that's accurate. One thing I will say though, because I don't want to make it sound like, oh, you know, I know some people are struggling. Oh, it's just so easy. I was lucky in a time that I went vegan in a place where I knew other vegans and where it was a pretty vegan friendly city. But when I graduated from college, I moved to Cincinnati for a job. And
Ohio.
Yeah, Cincinnati, Ohio. Back in the 19th century, Mark Twain famously said that if the world was going to end, he wants to move to Cincinnati because everything happens 20 years later there. And that was actually the difficult transition. Moving to a city where I felt like in Cincinnati there were maybe 30 vegans in the whole city and we all knew each other because there was like a monthly potluck. Whereas in Minnesota, you could go to Rainbow, which is the name of the grocery store there, and have like a natural food section. The Kroger in Cincinnati did not have vegan options, I mean, other than, you know, fruits and vegetables, but there was no Nature's Market section like the Krogers have now. There was a health food store that was like 20 miles away, and you could like special order things. But restaurants, I really could not eat out at all. So that was the real hard part, was moving there. And I know a lot of people still probably live in cities where, or maybe rural areas where it's like that. And, you know, the internet kind of was existing then. It was like in its infancy. Mm-hmm. So there were some like places where you could like order vegan stuff online, but a lot of it was still from like a catalog in a paper. It wasn't like now where you can go online and, you know, you can order vegan things from Amazon or whatever. It's pretty easy. So that was the real struggle, and I think that's where my strategy like came into place too, because it can be very isolating living there with, you know, okay, maybe I know a few other vegans and none of them really live close to me, but the majority of the people don't understand this. So
So it sounds like community, or at least support of some of the peers early on, definitely helped you transition easier to,
yes,
to vegan.
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm.
How did you have another strategy once you moved to Cincinnati, Ohio, how to combat the absence of vegan options there?
I just, you know, I really just could not eat out a lot of places, and I just would order these things from my health food store. I tried to attend, so there was a group there called Earth Save, which I think is still there.
Earth Save.
Mm-hmm. That was founded by John Robbins. You know, he...
John Robbins?
Yeah. You know,
John... He founded it?
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I don't know him personally, but I wish.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know him personally either.
Right. But, John Robbins is the son of the Robbins the ice cream.
Yeah.
But John Robbins was the one who wrote The Diet for New America and Food Revolution, which was an amazing book. And I actually am re-listening to it again on Audible right now.
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
So that was part of my strategy too, was that I wanted to educate myself. So I did read both of his books. I read several other books at the time. And I had the opportunity to meet Jim Mason, who is, he wrote a book with Peter Singer called Animal Factories. He also wrote a book called An Unnatural Order. The subtitle has changed on that a few times. I think it's currently called Why Are We Destroying the Planet and Each Other? Or maybe it's the Uncovering the Roots of Our Domination of Nature. That was another, mm-hmm. The title has changed a few times. But I got to meet him because he spoke at my college campus. So I read a few books that he wrote. I read some other animal rights books. That was another way to keep me, you know, that was another part of my strategy. But yeah, anyway, John Robbins founded Earth Save International, which is a environmental organization, and they had a chapter in Cincinnati, and they met once a month for a vegan potluck. So I made it a point to go to like every one of those. And there was a small animal rights group in Cincinnati that was like a handful of people. And I would go to events and, you know, with those people. So
I do have to say, as I said, I don't know John Robbins personally, but I have met his son, Ocean Robbins.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah, he mentions Ocean in the book. I can't remember which one, if it was, maybe it was both, Diet for a New America and then The Food Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He was here. So Ocean was here in Atlanta for Remedy Food Atlanta, which was another conference, I think, November 2016. That took place at Emory Conference Center, and I met a lot of plant-based docs there,
okay.
too. I have Ocean's book right there, signed by Ocean. But it was really cool. I mean, just a quick kind of off-the-topic conversation. Ocean did a presentation as well at the conference, and he was just joking about how he was stuck pretty much with the vegan way of life because of his father and the fact that they named him Ocean.
Yeah.
So he was pretty funny about it, but yeah. Anyways, okay. So, community, engaging community, and feeding yourself with information and inspiration from both the perspective of the impact of the animal agriculture on environment, as well as the ethical argument of it. Sounds like that's what helped you to kind of stay focused and true to your values, regardless of inconvenience factor in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How did you get to Atlanta from there?
I was in Cincinnati because I was working for Delta,
mm-hmm.
and then I transferred with them to Miami, and then it ended up bringing me here to Atlanta 12 years ago.
Got it. And how, let's get back on the route of the vegan and animal activism through line through your life. How did that express itself through your movement between different areas and through your work?
So I started out, like I said, with a campus animal rights group in the Twin Cities. We had a group called the Student Organization for Animal Rights, and it was, I went to a college called McAllister College. It's a small liberal arts school, but the organization was for students at any of the campuses. So, you know, University of Minnesota, St. Thomas, St. Catharines, Hamline. There's a number of colleges and universities in the Twin Cities. So we were all a part of that. Then I went to Cincinnati. We had a few people involved in a small group called the Animal Rights Coalition. And, you know, PETA would, I was on, you know, back in that day, PETA was like the only animal rights organization around.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on their list. And so sometimes they would have a person coming to Cincinnati and, you know, then they would send us an email and we'd meet. And then there was a kid who was involved with the Animal Rights Coalition in Cincinnati, named Nathan Runkle. He was a teenager back at the time. I remember him, you know, being like 14 or 15 and coming down from, he lived sort of near Columbus, Ohio, and he'd come down to Cincinnati for some of the events. And then he decided to start his own organization called Mercy for Animals.
I have goosebumps. I can't believe it. That's coming around this way. That's so cool.
Yeah. So I got involved with Mercy for Animals when we were in an Ohio organization.
Have you met Nathan personally?
Yeah. I've known him since he was like 14.
Oh, my God.
I don't really keep in touch with him any longer now that Mercy for Animals has sort of become really huge.
Mm-hmm.
But So he started Mercy for Animals in Ohio, and at the time it was just an Ohio organization. We had chapters in Cincinnati, Columbus, Dayton, Cleveland. I was the Cincinnati regional coordinator, and we did presentations about undercover investigations at egg farms in Ohio, turkey farm. We did rodeo, undercover rodeo stuff. So I did that, and then I moved to Florida. And there was a small group in Florida that really didn't do a lot at the time that I lived there, so I wasn't too involved with that. But one thing we did do is, you might know if you lived in South Florida, Lincoln Road.
Mm-hmm.
So me and a guy named Brad King and a couple of other people, we would go to Lincoln Road. And there's a vegan restaurant, or there was a vegan restaurant in Fort Lauderdale called Sublime. And the woman who ran it, Nancy, she also funded this little animal rights organization in Florida. And she gave us a, this is like, you know, back in 2005, so portable stuff like iPads and all did not exist. So we had a body TV that this guy Brad would wear, and it was like a TV that he would wear on his chest with video footage of like, you know, undercover footage, or maybe it was like PETA videos or something. And then I would hand out literature on Lincoln Road. So I did that when we were living in Florida. Brad now has a, he has since moved to Australia, so everybody should check it out. He has a sanctuary in Australia. It's called Farm Animal Rescue Australia. So they're a great organization. And then I came to Atlanta, and I've sort of changed. I noticed, you know, when I was with Mercy for Animals, how it went from being a small organization to a big organization. And when organizations change and they become more dependent on donor funding, sometimes the ideals of the founders, they don't get to, you know, necessarily do what they want to do. They have to do what the donors want. And I didn't really like, you know, I didn't want to be with a large organization that was dependent on donor funding, because that meant that I had to use literature that maybe said stuff that I didn't agree with, or take a approach to activism that I didn't really think was effective or beneficial. So I sort of came to believe that the best sort of activism is the activism of the individual. And there, I mentioned to you before we started this about, there is one small group that I support, which is the South Florida Vegan Education Group. And it was founded by two vegans who live in South Florida, and they decided they wanted to do something totally different. So they, basically the two of them, they go to conferences, they do presentations, and they talk about veganism holistically. And I gave you a pamphlet, but it talks about veganism as not just a diet or a fad, but holistically as far as a way of living ethically. So more of the philosophy of veganism. And there are some groups doing that in schools too, like Ethical Choices here in Atlanta, although that's focused on teenagers, whereas South Florida Vegan Education Group is more about adults. So I like that, and I use their literature because a lot of the mainstream animal groups, they don't really talk about veganism. They talk about cutting back on meat, going veg. They use a lot of celebrity imagery, and not all these celebrities are necessarily vegan. And to me, it's more the message sort of gets lost in let's make this trendy and let's not talk about the real issues. I think a lot of them also talk about they want to have they want to be able to have steps that they can say to their donors or to people that follow them, like, we accomplished this and this and this. In order to do that, they may do some campaigns that I don't really feel are effective for veganism. So, for example, they might have a campaign for getting a restaurant to go to cage, you know, get cage-free eggs. It's a non-vegan restaurant. Well, as a vegan, I feel like I want to educate people about veganism. I don't want to stand outside of a restaurant that sells all kinds of meat and say, hey, we're going to boycott you until you get cage-free eggs. Well, I don't want people to eat eggs, period. And this restaurant sells dead animals anyway. So, to me, that's just a waste of time. And it kind of reinforces the idea of animals are ours to use. So, so getting back, I came to believe that activism, for me, the best way to do it is just to be an individual activist, whether that's online or in person. So, you know, I'm wearing this vegan shirt today. I wear a vegan shirt a lot of times.
I love it.
And while I was waiting to meet you at the coffee shop, a woman came up to me and said she liked my shirt. So I gave her a pamphlet from the South Florida Vegan Education Group. If I had time, and, you know, she had her headphones on, so I couldn't really have a conversation. But if I have time, I'll engage people longer. And I remember one time I was wearing my Honey LeBronx vegan drag queen t-shirt sitting at a bar, and some guy at the bar was like, hey, I like your t-shirt. And I started talking to him about veganism. And I've talked to people about veganism at the checkout line at Home Depot, the guy doing my emissions check, all from a t-shirt. So, and I have literature, I keep it in my purse or in my car. And I feel like those kind of conversations are more meaningful than somebody just walking past a bunch of people standing outside of McDonald's saying boycott McDonald's because, you know, they don't use cage-free eggs.
So
there's definitely something very special about the power of the personal connection and also the power of the story when you're able to just share with somebody and or speak with somebody from the heart. Yeah, as you said, I think there's something that is so impactful because you can, like when it's just one-on-one peer-to-peer conversation, you can't just kind of ignore it and walk away. But I'm curious, what do you usually, like, where do you, what would you say to that woman today in the coffee shop? Or what did you say to the guy at the bar? How do you strike the conversation? What do you start with?
Well, he just said he liked my shirt. And I think I asked him if he was familiar with Honey LeBronx, the, you know, vegan drag queen. And he said no, but he said he had a friend who was vegan. And I, you know, I said, oh, okay, well, you know, I've been vegan for 24 years and, you know, this is a group that I support, and I gave him the pamphlet, and I talked a little bit about, in that case, Honey LeBronx, the vegan drag queen, since that was the shirt that I had on, mm-hmm. and where he could find their videos. So I usually always try to mention, like, where people can go online, and tailored to what, you know, in that case, Honey LeBronx, since that was the t-shirt, but mm-hmm. if it had been, you know, a conversation about something else, depending on what he mentioned, you know, I might, like, I've had coworkers at work approach me. I had a woman who came up to me one day at work, and she said, she kind of whispered to me, and she said, can I ask you something? And I thought, oh no, like, what, you know, this doesn't seem like it's good. And I was like, okay. And I'm, you know, I don't know what I was expecting. And she said, I think I want to go vegan. And I'd be, she didn't want people to hear. And she has lupus. And so, you know, and I'm not a doctor. I don't know a whole lot about medical stuff, but I did go online and get some information about plant-based diets for people with lupus. So then I gave that information to her the next day or a couple days later when I next saw her. So I try to, you know, it just depends on what the conversation is and, you know, what the person talks about. If they talk about, you know, they're maybe interested in veganism for specific health reasons or for an animal reason. You know, sometimes I've had people say that, you know, they're interested in sanctuaries. So I'll mention some of the local sanctuaries, Farm of the Free, Full Circle, mm-hmm. Sweet Olive Farm, and talk about that. So, and always have my literature to give them. So
mm-hmm. You come prepared. So what I'm hearing is, in terms of effective and beneficial individual activism, I'm hearing you make it relatable, you make it personable, you make it applicable to the situation that a person can basically use depending on the context, and you also come prepared with your literature. Is there any other suggestions that you have about maybe the tone or like any other guiding principles that you use for people who may be new to veganism and maybe overly excited? I remember when I first became vegan, I just wanted to like go on top of the mountain and shout to everybody that everybody should go vegan and show everybody the scary videos and just tell them how it's going to ruin their heart and their health. And it was coming from the good place, but I don't think it was coming as kindness by any means. And I was wise enough to not always do that and like to kind of try to rail myself in and take a step back before I could share from the place of kindness. But then I think not everybody's able to do that, and it's understandable because as you said, that you felt like you were lied to. I think a lot of people who discover veganism and who come to this information about all the cruelty that's happening or all the negative health consequences that happen, they do get angry, and I think it's understandable. And when they want to share, they share from the place of anger. Can you talk about what maybe not to do when you first become vegan and want to share your story?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly understand why people, you know, feel angry, and I hear a lot of non-vegans saying that they have had negative experiences with angry vegans. Although I have to say, they're talking about all these angry vegans that they've met, and I'm thinking, I don't really meet vegans unless I'm going to a vegan event, you know, with the intention that I know there's going to be vegans there. So I'm kind of like, where are they meeting all these vegans? I think they're kind of exaggerating. Maybe they've seen comments online, mm-hmm. and I think online it's just, you know, on any topic, veganism or otherwise, people tend to act, you know, very angry and maybe not the way that they would in person, and things can get easily misinterpreted and mm-hmm. turn into ugliness. But as far as in person, you know, I think the goal is to reach people who can be reached, not, you know, like when I first started doing activism with this group in Minnesota, we would do circus protests, and we had some people who would come up to us who were screaming. I had people actually get physically violent with me.
Wow.
Those are not the people that you're going to reach. So
lesson learned.
If someone is, you know, overtly hostile, negative to the message, being rude, it's best just to not engage them, because you're not going to have an effect. Arguing with someone is just going to entrench them more. Mm-hmm. You want to reach the people who can be reached. And sometimes the people, you know, they may not agree with you on things. You just have to, you know, it can be hard. Maybe I've just been doing it for so long, I'm used to it. You got to try to keep calm and not let it upset you. I also think a lot of people, new vegans, the first thing they want to do is they want to get their family to all go vegan. And, you know, I don't know everybody's family. I can only say that, you know your family, but it may not be wise to start with your family, because, because, you know, you're going to have to live with these people for a long time, maybe. So it's easier with people you don't know. That might be better to get practice talking to people you don't know, or people who are not your family members, because you may never get your family members to go vegan, and it might just make things really ugly between you. Mm-hmm. I know for me it's been really hard, because I have some family members who, you know, they know all this stuff and they just don't care, and it's like I can't keep, you know, 24 years later, keep bringing it up over and over again, because I know it's not going to, I've had to just let it go. Like, mm-hmm. they're not going to change, or they're not changing. If they are changing, it's not going to be because of something I force on them. They're going to have to come to that on their own. So, mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, it definitely takes practice. For some people, it might be like leading by example. I think leading by example is good, but I don't think you can go beyond that, because you definitely do want to educate people, but mm-hmm. I guess you just got to practice and try your best to not let it get upset, to upset you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what I found for myself is, it helps other people. So they don't get like too defensive if I just share from kind of like my personal experience and like why I made the decisions that I made and like how my transition looked like, or what I eat for breakfast, instead of trying to say that this is the truth and this is how things should be done. I think I find that I can basically share the same information, but that slight angle kind of helps, and it doesn't make other people feel threatened. But then also kind of just always being open and welcoming, because I think, especially early on, I mean, I had a lot of not haters, but people who were like, just looked sideways on me and thought I was crazy. But just because I just kept going, and I was always, and am still always, inclusive. Like, I want people, if they ever think about maybe I should make a change, I want them to think of me as a person they're comfortable to ask questions, and that I'm not gonna judge them. So I guess, and I always work to find that like balance for myself, but it's about sharing the consequences, but at the same time not making people threatened, or not making them feel like I judge them to a degree that where they wouldn't come to me, or they wouldn't ask me questions if they had any questions. Because if anything, but I want to be of help to people who are willing to transition. Kind of as you said, for those people who are willing to hear, I want to be there for them. So I think, yeah, I think that's definitely very helpful. Well, how did you, what was your transition? How did that happen, your engagement with the Vegan Atlanta Facebook group? So it's a humongous group for those listening. If you're not a part of it, it's Vegan Atlanta group. Jen, you said it's about 8,000 people now?
Yeah, over 8,000 now.
This is remarkable. And it's been a great resource for me. I think it was one of the first groups that I joined when I moved to Atlanta 2 years ago. So it's been a great resource for me in terms of anything related to restaurants or resources or just any kind of trends. There are people sharing their personal stories of becoming vegan and maybe like seeking some advice on their journey, or sometimes just sharing their frustration, or sharing some of the like new billboards or anything vegan related within Atlanta community. And I personally find it helpful and inspirational, but I know you are in the nitty-gritty of things. So can you talk a little bit more about how your engagement in the community and some of the trends that you see?
Sure. Well, Vegan Atlanta started out like in the early days of Facebook around 2008. I'll back up a bit. When I moved to Atlanta in 2006, the only vegan group around was, besides the GARP, the animal rights group, but there was a vegan group, and this was how long ago that was. It was on Yahoo Groups. It was called the Atlanta Vegan Lunch Group, and we would meet once a month on a weekend and have lunch. And sometimes it was at a restaurant, and sometimes somebody would host a potluck at their house. And it was a group of maybe like 30 people, you know, and each event would be like 15 people would come. We all kind of got to know each other because that was really the only vegan group in Atlanta.
How many people was it?
I'd say like 30 members, you know, and each event would maybe be like 15, 20 people, mm-hmm. maybe 30 at a big event, but yeah, so not that many. And I felt like these were, you know, oh, these are only 30 vegans in Atlanta. And maybe that was the truth back then. So in 2008, a guy who was in that group started Vegan Atlanta on Facebook. And, you know, we were at that point, Facebook, you know, had been mostly, you had to be a student to be on it. And then they opened it up to everybody. So it really, in the beginning, was like 30 people, and it really didn't get that much traffic. We all kind of knew each other, and we really didn't use Facebook that much. Social media didn't have the presence that it does now. Mm-hmm. But it started growing and growing. And the guy who founded it left Atlanta, and he turned over the group to David Fournier, who's the other admin. And then it just started to explode, I guess maybe like about, I'd say 2011, 12, 13, it started getting huge. And so maybe like 3 years ago, David approached me. I had known him through different vegan events and some of the people in that group, and asked if I'd be willing to help him admin the group, because it had just become too much for one person to do. So that's how I got onto that. And yeah, and then it just kept growing and growing. And when I had to write the rules of the group, because originally we didn't really want to have rules. We kind of just felt like people would know the rules, I guess, because mm-hmm. it was so small, we didn't need that, and we all nicely knew each other. But then it got to a point where it's like there was just too much drama, and we're like, okay, we gotta set some rules down. So when I wrote that was in 2016, and I had written, oh, we have over 6,000 members now, and I recently had to update that because now we have over 8,000. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw the rules coming out maybe a few weeks ago. Can you talk a little bit about what do you think the group is most helpful for right now? And then if you don't mind, if that's okay for you, maybe some of the things you wish you saw more of, or the direction that it would take.
Sure. So I think it's just because of the volume of people, it's a great resource for, restaurants or products. If there's a new product coming out, where can you get the product? Or like sales, because, you know, sometimes, and I don't want to say that being vegan is expensive, but if you want to buy certain vegan products like cheeses or, you know, some of the faux meats, those can be very expensive if you're buying a lot of processed food. So people will post stuff about, oh yeah, look, you know, this Kroger has this on clearance or whatever, or I found this new product here, and, you know, maybe that's the only place you can get it. So it's definitely helpful for that kind of thing. For restaurant, you know, people posting restaurant reviews and, oh, look, and not just vegan restaurants, but, you know, look, I got this, I found this restaurant that's not a vegan restaurant, and they have these options. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we have a files section where we've put some of that information. So it's really good for that. And I think people just asking, generic questions, like maybe I think somebody was asking about, like, dryer sheets the other day. Like, I've never used dryer sheets, but, you know, a lot of dryer sheets apparently are tested on animals, mm-hmm. and the person was looking for a suggestion for dryer sheets. You know, so just about any vegan thing that you can think of, like, where can I get a vegan, baseball glove or something? There's probably somebody who could tell you in there. So it's really good for that, mm-hmm. I think.
And what are some of the trends, as you mentioned? So you had to write the rules. What are some of the highlights of the rules?
Well, So when the group started out, and like I said, we mostly all knew each other, and we were vegan. And what I mean by that is, you know, the term was coined by Donald Watson in 1947, and I don't have the definition memorized, but it basically means that animals are not ours to eat, wear, or use for entertainment. And we all kind of felt like people know that that's what vegan is. And when I became vegan, that's kind of what people, vegan meant, you know, animal rights. But now it has sort of morphed into a lot of the general public views veganism as just a diet. And so people were joining the group who maybe were just interested in whether, you know, for health reasons, or maybe they thought they could lose weight, or just viewed it from a dietary standpoint and not from a ethical point of view. So we were getting a lot of drama related to, you know, people posting about non-vegan things. So we kind of had to, like, actually spell out in the group that, you know, animals are not ours to eat, wear, or use, and post the original definition of veganism. We also tended to get a lot of, I guess when certain people are drawn to veganism, especially for health reasons, that you may also get people who, because there are some vegan or plant-based dietitians or popular celebrities who don't necessarily have medical knowledge, but they, I'm just going to say there's pseudoscience, you know, pseudoscience stuff. So sometimes people get drawn into that, and, you know, they go beyond veganism into believing a lot of things that are not true about health. And so we're getting a lot of posts about untrue scientific thing, you know, things that are not scientifically true. So we, at that point, we had to make some rules, and we also had to go to a system where now every post has to be approved, which is kind of tiresome, but...
With 8,000 participants.
But it's definitely better than where it had been, which is where, you know, people would post, you know, crazy stuff, you know, fluoride is poison, the government's trying to kill us, kind of stuff. So that doesn't make it through now, although I can't stop people from posting about it in the comments.
Yeah.
So...
Can I ask if there is like the most off the wall post that comes up to mind that you had to maybe stop or not stop, but just curious if there are any of the interesting ones that come to mind?
We definitely get ones where people are trying to start an argument. You know, people who maybe they follow a vegan diet, but they don't, they think it's okay to go to the zoo, and they want to start an argument. So we get, like, you know, stuff like that. Off the wall. Well, we had a very strange, a woman had posted a chart, which I have a friend who's in the military who told me she was very familiar with this chart from military bases, where it's like a chart of the color of your urine, and, you know, the lighter your urine is, you know, the more hydrated you are. And it was basically showing you if your urine is this dark, you know, this means you're dehydrated or could be dehydrated. Mm-hmm. And we had approved the post only because it was summer and we felt like, okay, well, it's a generally healthy thing. It's not exactly related to veganism, but we do approve some off-topic things just because we want the group to also be like a community for vegans who, you know, could post about, oh, I'm vegan, but maybe I'm looking for a babysitter or whatever. So we want it to be a community too. So I didn't really see anything harmful about this post, but it really drew like a lot of controversy because people felt like, oh, well, you know, if you're on medication, then your urine may not be that color. So, you know, this post is ableist. And, you know, if you eat beets, then your urine might be red. And it's just stirred so much controversy that I couldn't even believe like a post about urine.
I wouldn't expect that.
But I guess people will find anything to argue about on the internet. So that was probably the one that stood out as being like, wow, I would not have expected that.
That's funny.
So.
Is there a vision that you hold for vegan community that you wish it was more of a certain kind, or maybe people would act in a certain way? Is there a wish that you have, like a vision that you have for a vegan community in Atlanta?
Well, I mean, I guess you always hope in a certain way that people will act, you know, mature
online, and that just doesn't always happen, which is unfortunate. But, you know, you have an age difference. I mean, there's some pretty young people in the group, mm-hmm. not to say that older people can't act that way too. I mean, I understand that food is a large part of our life because we eat 3 times a day, and that's a big thing, especially for new vegans. But I do see that some of the more serious posts sometimes talking about animal ethics and issues are sort of, you know, overlooked, and I wish that was not the case. But probably a lot of people who join the group, you know, maybe they're not interested in that. And it's hard to bring a balance because, you know, David and I get nasty emails and comments from people because the group isn't what how they envision it, and they don't really understand the history of the group, that it started out as a small group of people who were animal rights activists, and we want to keep it that way. And some people, you know, that's maybe not what they believe in. So, and then you have to sort of temper that with, we do want new people to join, and, you know, we certainly want to help educate people, but at the same time, it could be hard when someone is new but also, you know, argumentative or doesn't really understand the ideals of the group. Mm-hmm. So,
I cannot imagine. I'm sure it's very hard to manage, first of all, that large of a group, and then also, I mean, we seem to be an opinionated bunch of people, so I'm sure there's a lot that comes up. And I just want to say that, at least from my personal perspective, I just want to thank you for the work that you do to keep this group going, because especially, I don't think I was really thinking through the fact that you may be getting some hate emails or messages, and just like right now hearing that just makes me really sad. So I just want to thank you and want you to know that I know I appreciate the resources that are available through the group, and I'm sure 7,999 other people do as well. So thank you for your work, and I hope you keep going with what you do.
Oh, thank you. You're welcome, and thank you for thinking that. And yeah, it's, I mean, I guess you kind of have to just accept that, you know, you're going to have to take the bad in order to get the good. Mm-hmm. So, and you can't please everyone, because there's been times too where people will send me a message and they don't really necessarily understand why we didn't approve something or why something was deleted. And we explain it to them, and sometimes they're very nice about it, but they'll say, well, I don't necessarily agree, but okay, I understand. Mm-hmm. Because you just, nothing you can do is going to please like all 8,000 people. So,
Yeah. Okay, so you also mentioned that you were being interviewed for the documentary here. Can you tell us a little bit about the documentary?
Well, so there is a guy here, VW. He is doing a documentary about two of his family members. He challenged them to go vegan for a year. They're older, and I don't know a lot of the details because the movie is not out yet, and I haven't seen any clips of it. But I guess they had some health issues and maybe cholesterol and high blood pressure and things like that. So he challenged them to go vegan for a year, and he's been following them around for a year. And he's also doing, like, you know, filming different aspects of veganism in Atlanta. So he interviewed me. He's, I think he's gone to interview some people at farm sanctuaries in the area and vegan restaurants and things like that. I think he interviewed a vegan doctor. So he's kind of also making the movie about just the vegan scene in Atlanta. And then, you know, I think the year is up. I think they've been vegan for a year now and they're going to stick with it. But once his movie's done, he's going to put it out to see, you know, the changes that have happened in their lives since they've been vegan, how their health has improved, and, you know, any other thing. So that's exciting.
That sounds really exciting. So for the listeners, the advice on activism: if you're going vegan, do not convince your family first. But if you're going to convince them, make a documentary about it. Okay. So are there any pieces of advice? So for somebody who is maybe listening to this conversation right now and they're like, okay, well, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm kind of vegan curious now. And or maybe they just made a change. Do you have any suggestions on how to, if they're not vegan yet, why should they make the leap to trying it out? And if they are, what can they do to make it easier?
Well, I mean, I can say as a 24-year vegan, it's like hands down the best decision I ever made in my life. And I feel like even if I
have like made some bad decisions or, you know, things have not gone in my life the way I have wanted them to since I was 18, that I always still feel like I made such a great choice, and it's impacted my life in so many ways. And I don't know, I mean, you can talk to so many people who are vegans, and you probably too, and they all say the same thing. And the only thing they usually say is that they wish that they had done it sooner. Mm-hmm. They wish they had known. And, you know, just general advice is, you know, get with community, find groups online if you're online, or in person if you live in a larger city that has those groups.
Join Vegan of Atlanta.
Yeah, join Vegan Atlanta. Check, you know, maybe your city has groups on meetup.com. You know, it's great because the internet is there now, which wasn't around before, so it's a lot easier. There are probably places where you could find, like, a mentor. You know, but as far as the why, you know, it's the best thing that you can do for non-human animals, for yourself, and for the environment. And, you know, you may think, oh, like I thought, how am I going to live without cheese, you know? But once you make the transition, you really feel like, what was I thinking? Like, how could I have, you know, and some people may think it's really hard, you know, like, for example, I think running a marathon would be really hard. I don't think I could do that. But it's really not as hard as running a marathon, I have to say. I think it's a lot easier. And probably people who run a marathon, they probably think, oh, it's really not, you know, once you've done it. But,
That's helpful. I usually is, well, first of all, is there anything else that you want to share before I ask my final question? I know we talked a lot, we covered a lot of topics, and the individual activist message, I think, will be very well received. But is there anything else that you want to share before we start wrapping up?
Well, just I'll share some of my favorite websites.
Please
which
do.
Are the BeFairBeVegan.com is a good one.
What is it again?
BeFairBeVegan. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can follow them on Facebook. They have a website as well. Vegan Publishers is a good one to follow on Facebook. Casey Taft of Vegan Publishers has written a few books. One of them is The Millennial Vegan. I may be misquoting the title. And the other one, which I think is great, is called, I'm trying to recall the title, Motivational Methods for Vegan Advocacy, A Clinical Psychology Perspective. And I really think he's got a great, the way he runs the Vegan Publishers page and the information in the book, you know, he's a clinical psychologist. And he really talks about one thing that we touched on earlier about how you can be an effective advocate, how you can have conversations without making people feel excluded or getting angry, and how you can do it in a calm way and an effective way. So that's a great book, and that's a great page. Go Vegan World is another one I like to follow on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I think they've got good stuff. And then the South Florida Vegan Education Group, who also use Casey's methods in their presentations. And they have a blog. That's a good one. And, of course, I mean, recipes. There's probably so many websites now. You can just take your pick. There's tons of them. So,
do you have any favorites on the recipe books or recipe influencers?
So I'm like a recipe... It's funny, my husband is the cook in the family. Like, I do not cook. I'm a terrible cook, but I love cookbooks. I have like 72 of them. I'm like obsessed with, and I don't get them on ebook. I buy them. And I just pick out recipes for him to make.
Oh, I love it.
But some of my favorites are, there's Sarah Kramer. She had some in the 90s that are called The Garden of Vegan, Where It All Began, and La Dolce Vegan. Those are some good ones. They don't have pictures. But
well,
really,
that's the best part about the cookbook.
This was like in the 90s. But those are like my favorites for simple, like easy. Everything's always easy in those. I mean, but I can't even tell you because there's just whatever you're interested in for food, like any, you know, if you like Indian food or Italian or whatever, there's now a vegan cookbook out there for that, mm-hmm. which there didn't used to be. So,
yeah. We're spoiled in resources nowadays, which is a good thing, but absolutely, there is resources for everything now. And within Atlanta, too, there is any kind of restaurant or any kind of food that you can possibly think of, you can find it vegan.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite a vegan scene here in Atlanta, so come visit us if you're not local. Okay, well, I usually close with a question of what kindness means to you and how do you get to follow it in your everyday life, and hence the name of my podcast, Follow Your Kind. and we kind of talked a little bit about it before. I truly believe that everybody originally were brought to this world wired for kindness, and if we were just to stop and reflect on the consequences of our actions and act intentionally, we can really perhaps may be driven to make a different choices that aligns better with our values. So I'm always curious about my personal heroes, about how they define their kindness and how they get to follow it. So what does kindness mean to you, and how do you get to follow it in your daily life?
Well, I actually really like what you said about aligning with your values, because that's what I feel veganism is. And there's some meme that's, or maybe there's several memes that have gone around out there that talk about how everyone is born vegan. It's just, you lose that along the way. But when you choose to be vegan, you're just choosing to align your values, to align your actions with your values. So you're not really, you were born vegan. You just got lost along the way, and now you're putting your actions in alignment with your values. So
I love it. If you find that meme, please send it to me.
Yeah, I'll look. I mean, it was going around for a while. There was a whole bunch of them like that, but. Yeah, so I mean, I agree with that, and I try to, intentionally be kind to everyone. It's not always easy, as you know, being a vegan, and sometimes you feel like it's just depressing, and you want to be angry about things, and it can take a lot of effort. But you have to make the effort, because you don't know how it'll pay off for you in the end. And of course, I feel like being vegan is a part of that, and I have five rescued dogs, and I have a rescued bearded dragon.
Oh my God.
So, and my husband's on the board of Farm of the Free Animal Sanctuary, and he does a lot of volunteer work for them. I can't do as much because one of us has to stay home with our animals.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I agree with you in that, and it may take a lot of work in the beginning. Like I think we talked about that, how maybe when you first become vegan, and especially if you're like young and maybe in college and you have that energy and the drive and you want to change things and you want everything to change now. But once you get into practice with being kind and respectful, then it becomes a habit and it's not so much of an effort anymore.
Mm-hmm. That is beautiful. I love it. Well, thank you so much for your time, Jen. Thanks for coming all the way here. And I really appreciate everything you do within the vegan community of Atlanta and with the Vegan Atlanta chapter on the Facebook group. But also, it's such a beautiful story, and your principles around individual activism and the work that you do on a daily basis just by being who you are and being a kind and calm and comforting, educated and intelligent representative of the kind community. So I thank you for that and for your work, and I hope we'll continue this conversation.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
For more information, you can go to followyourkind.com or follow me on Instagram @kindchristina. Please also subscribe to the show and give me a good review. Thanks for stopping by.